Sideshow Listeners Questions, part one of two.
Good to that.
We're not here to take part, we're here to take over.
This is Lee Connolly, and this week on the Sod Show, is your shortest right to take over, yeah?
You may as well. You're halfway there, said John Bon Jovi.
Well, look, I thought it would be a good idea, because of your podcast, people have got questions that they want to ask you.
Yeah.
I thought it would be cool if you did some questions about the Sod Show.
I think you should.
Do you know what you should do right now?
What's that?
Roll the intro bit. Right.
You love singing your one.
This ain't about me, mate. It's about you. All
right? Right, let's go for it.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Sod Show Garden Podcast.
Right, I've got loads of questions for you. First question is, obviously, why did you start podcasting?
Oh, great question. There was nothing really there. To their credit, and it's not to be critical in any way, huge fan of what they do, but Gardener's Question Time are logically the stalwart run by the British Broadcasting Corporation. You have Gardener's Corner, run by BBC, also BBC, but Radio Ulster, now run by David Maxwell. At the time, it was a very different model, and I don't believe David was involved then. He's only in the driving seat the last couple of months. And Bob Flaherty, Pippa Greenwood et al. Do a really good job of doing Gardener's Question Time. But even at that, their model has changed from when I started the Sideshow. So if you take what they had then and you wanted gardening advice, then it was a perfect model.
Yeah.
If, without sounding entirely cocky or so sure of myself, if you have that knowledge already, which I do, then the little people inside my head wanted to know why, and I couldn't understand why nobody was asking the questions. Why did you choose to do that garden instead of that? If everybody's given £1 million, it's like children being told to paint things, and you put up an orange and say, well, paint that. And there's always, I was always the one down the back of the class who drew, you know, something that looked like an ostrich.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm not saying, you know, I didn't do it intentionally, but it's what I saw when I heard that or read that. Or you, maybe the analogy, the better analogy would be when you read a poem, how do you feel after it?
Yeah.
And I was the one who wrote the lyrics for Led Zeppelin as an answer, if that makes better sense to you. So, but nobody was asking the questions. Nobody asked the Rob Hardys and Rosie Hardys of this world. The voices just weren't there. And I think when I spoke with Giles Heap from C.D. Stone of recent, nail on the head, we have some really amazing people in this industry, really inspiring people, whether it's a garden designer or whether it's people who run a food bank in Oldham, the question still remains to why. And they are ultimately awe-inspiring, and I am a fan of, not a fan, but I want to know why they do what they do.
Yeah.
And that wasn't being answered, I guess.
Right.
But yeah, it just needed something. But then I'll go back and say, if you look at the models, the stalwarts are Gardener's Question Time. You have Love Your Garden, which takes it on a slightly different level, horticulturally speaking. And in Radioland, you really only have the BBCs.
Yeah.
You'll have segments within radio shows. Invariably, they're about hanging baskets or top of the pile at the minute is houseplants, subjects like that. And usually some, no disrespect, fair play to you, celebrity is brought in to speak about that or give a little bit of garden advice, but it's within a 3-hour show, if that makes sense.
Yeah,
to you.
Got it, yeah.
Chelsea Flower Show gets all of the coverage, and then it goes down a little bit the pecking order until you get to Cardiff, which invariably gets zero.
Yeah.
BBC don't cover that at all. Tatton gets a certain amount, Hampton gets a little bit more, and Chelsea gets a week of it. So if you're an Anabskinevsky Ball in Cardiff, why shouldn't you get a little bit of glory? If you're Mary who's running a garden show for 22 people in Cornwall, the difference between you and anybody else is what? There's more people attended, I get that. There's bigger budgets, I get that, I appreciate that. But the difference for me of why Mary in Cornwall or why Anna Skibniewski or why the new show manager at Chelsea should or shouldn't be on, or that person who got involved or backed it or put their €12 or their €12 million into, to me, I think they're all, as Giles would say it, they're all awe-inspiring, and there should be more of that. And so maybe the Sod Show is the voice for really sound people who say hello, goodbye and thanks, and wear their heart in their sleeve a little bit and do things that are a little bit, as I called it with Joe Thompson, there's a little bit of the pie already missing before you take it out of the box.
So I've said this before though, that you have a way of making people feel relaxed and just chatting, because interviews can be like really structured sometimes. You have a way of like making it flow.
I've no idea what can happen or be said in a Sod Show. I genuinely don't have any format to it. I think there are a couple of cliches, Sod Show bingo-y things that might pop up every now and again. But like to think that when I sit down with somebody who I don't know, not so much don't know, I might know them, but to sit down and have a 30-minute chat with anybody, a grown man. We were talking last night about, not so much when you get a little bit older, but just sitting down, one gentleman on one side, one gentleman or lady on the other side, and sitting down and having a conversation for 30 minutes. You'll find invariably now, if you have your own business and a mortgage, to get 30 minutes with anybody who you know face to face can be a challenging thing, just because life and family and etc. and work gets in the way and has to be respected and looked after, of course. When I take, for example, a name that's been involved with the Sod Show a little bit over the last while, but Andrew Fisher-Tomlin is a very good example of that. James Besson, not to drop inverted commas big names, but when you get somebody like James or Andrew or Kate Gold and they start to go back to their childhood, which gives you an insight into why maybe they think the way they think or how they do things the way they do things. I'll go back to it. You meet somebody in a bar, in a nightclub, a pub, a restaurant, whatever, at a bus stop, and you hear the stories, say, you know, and then, you know, 20 years later, we're married, and you're going, what? That's not how it works. And if you just hone in on that and that example, hypothetically, for a lot of you out there, the chances of you walking to a bar and meeting the person who you're going to spend the rest of your life with, you know, you could do that 30 times over and it just never happens. So the only thing I've ever said is you turn on the microphone, you say hello, goodbye and thank you. Yeah. When I met Joe at Chelsea and I'm standing at the edge of her garden with Ben Brace and Chris Young of the RHS magazine, and Helen and James Besson are sitting in the garden and James ushers me in. And myself and James chat for a little bit, and Joe comes up and says, oh, hi, Peter, Joe Thompson. I said, I know you, who you are. I didn't expect you to know who I was. And she said, I heard your interview last night with Andrew. I just had to tune in. And my head was saying, the day before our press day, Chelsea, and you're like, what are you doing listening to me? I obviously didn't say this out loud, but that's what was running through my head. I wouldn't listen to me the day before press day Chelsea, one of the biggest, the World Cup of horticulture or whatever you want to compare it to. In that hour-long episode, to end up talking about Shania Twain with a guy who used to be the, I don't want to misquote him, the head selector of gardens for Chelsea Flower Show for 10 years until, I think he says he got bored.
Right.
And that just leads to the next question. As far as I'm concerned, how we got to that point in the conversation, I don't know. I genuinely don't know. But I like to think that if you've got anything about you as, do I call it, you know, well-reared, I think just being able to talk to somebody
it sound so simple when you say it like that.
But I don't have a formula for it.
Yeah.
I'll go back and say it, and I invariably say this every now and again with people who sing from the heart. It's like finding the equation for falling in love. And once you find it, then the actual chasing the woman or the man of your dreams and them not answering your calls and, you know, waiting 3 days before you call them back, but not four, because that's pushing it. Turn them down when he asks you to dance the first time at the nightclub, but maybe the second time, and then eventually on the third time you go, yeah, all of that dance bit that goes on around it, as primitive as I make that sound, I apologise, but I think it's just a conversation, isn't it?
Yeah, that's right.
But there's no equation. I apologise. I wish I had a...
No, I didn't want, like, it written down or nothing.
But I hear designers, Lee, saying, oh, it was inspired by Guatemalan quail eggs, and when I thought of them, the scent that they evoked, it made me think of blue. And that's why I'm wearing orange trousers. And I'm going, what? You published that? You wrote that? And you hear that claptrappery, if I might call it. And then the hope is that I think I've said it before, the people that I've had on the side show, Golden Rules, Paloga Boy and Thanks, Pretty Sound, the type of person you wouldn't mind bringing home to introduce to your mum. And puts their plate in the dishwasher.
Sure.
Whether or not you're the Don, the man or the woman, irrespective of how you're perceived, to be able to do those basic things means you're pretty human.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, to be very fair about it, I think when people say that was a brilliant episode, and I invariably turn around and say, well, it's nothing to do with me. I'm the constant, I'm the microphone holder. What makes it great is not me. I'm the same in every single episode.
Yeah.
What makes it great essentially is them. You might say, well, it's edited well or it's been produced well or something like that. They're the variant and they're the one that makes it great. So, yeah.
Got another question. Do you believe that podcasting is the best media stream for gardeners and why?
Oh, difficult question.
Big question, that one.
If you go back to the 80s and 90s, and I was reared in a household where the radio was always on in the background, my grandmother's house in particular, the radio was always on. I don't know why entirely, but they would tune to Radio 1 and it would just play. It didn't matter whether they were talking about pogo sticks or weather forecasts over a 4,000 year period and the average mean temperature in the Dominican Republic. Pineapples, gerbils, it didn't matter. It just was on. It was like a constant evolutionary sound in the backdrop. But things have changed. And if you look at the Netflix model, or essentially the rise of A1 company producing A1 show, be it House of Cards or one of them. I don't watch a whole lot of TV, but I'm aware of the numbers and how the demograph and how it's being watched has changed. Then now what's starting to happen is you identify, let's say, Match of the Day or Love Island or whatever floats your boat, and you tune into that and you can watch the entire episode. No longer lives the box set really, but you can watch the entire online digital version of it for the next 3 weeks if you so wish.
Yeah.
And the same thing's happening in audio, where you identify that sports podcast, that gardening podcast, and that person there who does that one on art or crochet or whatever it might be. And so you have made a conscious decision to subscribe to that podcast, to allow it drop into your phone every week. This isn't the mailing list of, I've put your name on a mailing list and then I just unsubscribe or allow you only go to the junk folder. The consumer of the audio has made a conscious decision to subscribe.
Yeah.
They want to listen to you. You're not background noise. So once you buy, I won't say buy into that, but once you decide you're on the happy bus, then you're listening to Peter or Lee or Jane or whoever it might be talk about what it is that they love doing because you want to listen to it. You might turn around and say, well, I found that guest a bit boring. I mean, you know, in art terms, if it's Machiavellian art, then I don't really want to listen to it. If it's the fact that a couple of months ago you would have had it where Banksy's art piece went through the shredder machine just after it had been sold at auction, then I think that's brilliant PR.
Yeah.
Essentially, so you're watching the showman do what the showman does, and he does it extremely well. And there's a reason why he's, you know, 8 years later still in the news and still deemed as being fresh.
Yeah.
So is it the best one? Yeah, what was it that was said to me? There was a comedian friend of mine, and he said, look, he said, Peter, you buy a ticket to one of my gigs for 60 quid. You drive to the venue, you have a shave, you brush your hair, you put on a bit of makeup, the clothes, you have a couple of drinks beforehand, maybe a bite to eat, but you've physically taken money out of your back pocket and you've bought the ticket to the gig that is a comedian.
Yeah.
You're already partway there. You're invested in the thing slightly. And so it's a hell of a lot easier to get laughs.
Yeah.
Because they're expecting it. So you give them what they want. Therefore, you get the giggles. And it's like the equation now is complete. It's gone full circle. And in audio terms, it's not like, because I think it's well known, I won't take money off of listeners. I just want to accept it. It's not for me. And I like the fact that people tune in. I'm still humbled by it, but I think when Peter's in your earbuds, or again Lee or Jane or whoever that might be, I think the fact that you've taken the time to press that subscribe button in iTunes or Spotify or any of them, the audio digital equivalent of buying the ticket for the comedian's gig, maybe that I'm not explaining that well, But it's not background noise, is the point that I make.
Yeah, I've got you.
Yeah.
I know what you're saying. I've got another question, which is, it's a demanding schedule to produce a weekly podcast. How long does it take you to produce each show from start to finish?
Oof. So if I recorded an interview with you right now and then got up tomorrow morning, it would take the guts of a day to piece one together.
It's quite involved.
It is, yeah, but I don't have many friends, and
I can confirm that.
Yeah, I've got. Well, no, no, but on a serious note, I there's not a whole lot that I do outside of horticulture, and I like it. If I didn't like it, it would be an endurance,
yeah.
And any relationship that is enduring, just it's time to throw in the towel. And I think if you're playing football on the street or chess or crochet, it doesn't really matter. If it becomes a pain in the ass, if it becomes a struggle, if it's a relationship with the woman of your dreams, if the things that she does or you do irate her and vice versa, it's time to turn around and say, honey, it's been a good ride.
Yeah.
I'm getting off the rocket ship.
Yeah.
So I never see it as I've lost a day of my time. I can do it over like 4 hours here and 4 hours there, but essentially by the time you package it all up and pop it out, you got about a day.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
Like interview wise,
uh-huh.
Have you ever had anyone refuse to do an interview?
Oh. No, I don't think so. There's been a few where people have been in the middle of a Chelsea build, for example, and we were scheduled to do something, and obviously they've got to build the garden, I get that, but the interview still took place. It just, they might have delayed it by a couple of hours, that's understandable.
Yeah.
But I'll go back and say it, I tend not to really ask people for interviews for no apparent reason. It's become one of them. So Joe Thompson, for example, came about because Andrew said, I just text Joe. She'll be here in a little bit. Do you want to have a chat with her?
Yeah.
I said, oh, okay. That's it. The one with Stuart Charles Tone, was it Stuart's one, I think? I think CED rang me and said, would you like to interview Stuart? I can't remember the last time I identified a person and said, oh, I'd love to interview them. We just seemed to end up on the dance floor together.
That must be quite nice to be pretty much the go-to person if you want to talk about something.
I never thought about it like that. I never thought about it like that because I'll go back to what I was saying earlier on, Lee. When you've got the basics, the hello, goodbye, thanks, your grand, I'll put it in the dishwasher, here, I'll take yours, which is how I would rear my daughter to be. It's just logic, the simple bits done well. And because I think they have them, I've never really been in the company of anybody, and 400 plus episodes later, of you should be privileged to sit near me, wear my Ferrero Rocher, somebody bring me my donkey.
Yeah,
it's never been that, and I've never been made feel that. And on the other hand, I've never seen anybody as that because they have those basic qualities.
Yeah,
and I'm unsure how I'm seen or perceived, and I think if I asked and I was, I've never asked because I've got Irish genetics, which makes me not very good at taking compliments, and when you get insulted by the barman, that's what makes me giggle.
Yeah.
if that makes sense to you. So when the compliments, or should they come, I tend to palm them off.
Yeah.
But I don't know how to do anything else really. So I hear them and I accept them, and I'm very grateful for them. But I'm just not very good at dealing with them after that.
That's lucky, mate, 'cause I'm not giving you any compliments. That's good.
No, yeah. But I hope that answers your question. But it's very much a two-way street. I'm glad that the Sideshow is seen as a thing worth listening to, and it can't work unless people come to me and say, would you like to have a chat? I've got a story that's a bit interesting.
Yeah.
Or just have a chat. And equally, it doesn't work without the listener.
Yeah.
So you got a trio in there. If nobody listens, it's just me talking to myself. And then the guest don't see it as worthwhile, but I think it's a nice little bubble.
Yeah.
And I'm quite, yeah. I hope that answers what you were aiming for. Yeah.
We've got another question which says, where's the most, I think I might know the answer to this one, but where's the most unusual place or noisiest place you've interviewed a guest?
Oh, what were you going to say?
Did I see on Twitter the other day, you, was it Joe Thompson when you interviewed on the back of a truck?
I interviewed Joe sitting on a Knife for Williams trailer in Battersea Park in a car park, and I interviewed Lou Patrons, or Linda Patrons as she's officially known, Lou to her friends, of Greenfingers charity, a wonderful charity I should add, and I interviewed her sitting on a stack of pallets next to a skip. it's not intentional, I promise. I promise you, none of it is. I'm laughing, we're both smiling, which is good. I just seem to end up in there or in those places, and I don't know how.
Yeah.
I think what's probably funny, not I find it funny because it was brought up in conversation recently by, I can't remember who said it to me. She said there was a Hoover, a vacuum cleaner going off in the background during our interview. And then somebody said, well, there was squeaky door syndrome, as I called it, when I interviewed Fisher Tomlin. And then there was a guy reversing a forklift truck in the background of an interview, I think it was with John Wire, I'm unsure on that one. They all just seem to be, I've never seen a Jack Russell with four legs that operate normally. They all have a wonky leg, or there seems to be an infidelity somewhere, but it's a nice characteristic to have. I think they all just end up a little bit with a piece of the pie missing.
Yeah.
And some people find that endearing. I hope you do. I genuinely hope you do. But I don't know why it always seems to be a little bit not in a perfect studio.
Do you know what, though? I like that because it makes you feel like you're there. Like, it makes you like, well, for me anyway.
Yeah.
It makes me feel like I can picture the setting.
Yeah, but I've never turned around and said, there's Disney, Pixar are recording a Western movie. Let's sit in the saloon bar over there with cowboy hats on and let the barman slide a frothy beer mug all the way down the counter. Yeehaw, let's go. It's never like that. I think when we were in Battersea Park, they had their conference room, and I remember thinking in my head, there was no fresh air. Not fresh air, there was no like big, there was no wind blowing through it, not wind, you know what I mean? The doors weren't open and everybody's in and people do business in it, and that the right place for that to happen, the right environment for that to happen. But I just didn't want that in the recording sense with Joe, when you're trying to think and the wind's blowing through your hair. Well, I didn't think it was going to blow that much through our hair. And so it did. All of the cracks and crevices are genuinely unintentional. It's just there's so many of them and people are starting to say it to me now.
Yeah.
But I...
Like the phone call thing.
Oh, jeez. Yeah, I forgot about that. That was... I'll give you a funny story on that one. It was Ian Thwaites from the Cactus and Succulent Society. Wonderful photographer and a really good guy, a really good friend. Very kind to me when I joined the Garden Media Guild first. And we tend to meet each other a lot at garden shows in a similar way that you and I would do. Mm-hmm. And I rang him and I couldn't get through on the mobile. So I rang him on his landline, his house phone, and BT blocked the call because it came from the recording desk. But I was recording in anticipation of him answering the call. So I explained it to him. But the following week I rang Charles Dowding, the author of, was it, No Dig Gardening is what it was. Mm-hmm. And exactly the same thing happened, except I got his voicemail on his mobile phone, and then I got BT, and then I think I got BT again, and I just left. I started to laugh, and I left it all in. I only had a half an hour.
Yeah.
And then I kind of said, well, not so much I wanted to fill that block of time, but a bit like what you said. This is the behind the scenes what happens when you're trying to phone a superstar, Charles Dowding. I'm not the BBC. I'm not a broadcasting corporation. This isn't my full-time job. I'm down the back of my garden, operating on a really limited budget. Don't play the violin bow, if you understand me. But it is what it is, if you understand me. I do love it. But this is what happens. And so my 30 minutes, even to get 28 good minutes or 29 good minutes with Charles and Ian, because of the virtue, sole virtue of the fact that I couldn't get through, I was now late for the thing that I was supposed to do with you know, anyway. But they met each other, and Ian told me. And Ian said to Charles, oh, I heard your interview. And Charles said, Ian, oh, I heard yours. I thought it was hilarious, so...